Reading FC are safe. That sounds familiar. That's because it's exactly what we started the show with last week, when Reading FC were basically safe, but now we're actually safe for real. This is the Tarlest End Podcast, episode 194, with Reading FC's are next to them in the Championship, officially not going to happen this season. It's Rotherham going down in our place, and it's a celebration of sorts, I think, at the moment. We've still got one more game to go against Birmingham, of course, and, you know, the fated Portugal day that is going to be happening at the Mad Stad next week is truly the time for celebration. For the moment, with the Tarlest End Podcast, we'll be talking all things transfers and where we go from here, and, of course, the Middlesbrough game, the 2-1 defeat that we had on Saturday. I'm Mark May, your host to do that. And joining me is the Tarlest End Weekend Preview host, Ollie Allen. How's it going, mate?
Very well, thanks. Yeah, I'm actually a bit sad that the season's coming to an end, actually, which I did think I'd be saying a couple of months ago.
Yeah, that is a bit of an odd feeling, isn't it? That you know, we have actually enjoyed this past few weeks and to get to where we are. It has been, I must say, what I've been thinking mainly over the relegation battle is how well all the teams have done, in the sense of, you know, everyone can pat themselves on the back. I think Rotherham gave it a really good go. I think Millwall have, you know, taken some great results. We have as well. Wigan. It's an interesting relegation battle to have been a part of, and very different to last year's, when everyone was awful and that we were just the least awful.
For sure. I think obviously because Rotherham have definitely given us a bit of a scare a couple of times, haven't they? You know, they led, of course, against Birmingham last weekend. They led against Swansea on the Easter weekend, so they definitely put up a very good fight, I think.
Yeah, so it's Rotherham that go down and Reading staying up, and we'll talk about the transfers and whatnot a bit later. We have a bulging mailbag, and before we get into the recap, just a thank you as we get into the final weeks of the season. The Patreon campaign continues to chug away, and we have been using it in various ways recently as a way of sort of investing in some software, as how we record the podcast, and also just in the general sense of covering games and everything that we sort of try to do. And as the summer brings round, it's probably gets a little bit more difficult in the sense of, you know, holidays and everything. But the Patreon campaign just shows us that it is that sort of, this, you know, getting the motivation to do the extra little article here and there, or you know, plan the podcast on the train home from work, which I've been doing earlier. And those sort of things are you know, the appreciation that you guys show for us is exactly why we do it. So instead of me babbling on, we'll jump into the recap.
View from the Tarlest End. Recapping this week's Championship action.
2-1 then to Middlesbrough. It finished up at the Riverside. It was the inflatables day for Reading fans, all those who made the trip up north. A fantastic effort. It is, let's face it, the worst away game for it to be on inflatables day, only because it's the furthest one. I think it's the furthest one, pretty
much.
Yeah,
this season, yeah.
Yeah, this season with no Sunderland, Newcastle or what have you. So, you know, it's a difficult trip to go for a defeat. And yeah, it did start in a very good manner. Danny Loader's first senior goal for the club. An absolute screamer as well. I think for me, it was a moment where he picks up the ball, you know, it's a couple of touches, looks up, he knows exactly what he's going to do. He's got the technique to pull it off as well. It's the sort of goal that shows for me, while he does need time, and while we've spoken quite a lot on this podcast about, you know, how best to give him that time or where he needs to serve it, it shows to me, Ollie, it underlines that he's still got the potential to do some great things.
Yeah, I was absolutely delighted for him. Really, really pleased for him because, you know, I've said all season that, you know, you don't score, you know, 15, 20 goals for the academy and you don't score, you know, goals for the England youth teams, you know, without being, you know, a very good player. I think he needed that goal. And I think that's the main thing. I think more than a result, obviously, because the result in the end was meaningless. I think that the biggest thing from the weekend's game was load of scoring, because I think we've talked about how he sort of needs that loan spell away next season, which I think he still does. You know, I don't think he's quite ready for regular Championship football just yet. And I think obviously, you know, he's still only 18 years old. I think you have to remember that a lot of the time, that, you know, he's been a regular fixture really, you know, at least in the squad for the second half of the season, and he's played, you know, 20 odd games now, and it's very unusual for a player of his age. I think he's possibly the youngest player in Reading modern history to make 20 appearances for the club. So, you know, he's you know, wise beyond his years in that sense. And I think, it wasn't just a tap or anything. It was a fantastic goal. You know, really, really well taken. I'm just delighted for him.
Yeah, it's a moment when we can stand up and say, you know, congratulations, Danny. That is well earned, and it's well worked for. He's a lot of players. I think John Daly Bodvarsson took to Twitter and said that it was a goal that he'd worked hard for, and that he'd put in the hours on the training ground, and seeing that come off is great. However, you know, in terms of the match itself, Reading then went on to you watch the highlights back, and it seems like certainly Middlesbrough, perhaps in that moment, something did click in a team that has struggled of late and has really needed the win, certainly against us on the weekend. And they hit the post a couple times in the first half, a couple of good Emiliano Martinez saves in there as well, and the goals, one sort of came from Andy Yeardom, half clearance, the other one's from, it's kind of hard to, the penalty given away, kind of hard to pinpoint whether it's Yeardom or Winamoto or someone like that who's made the actual clinical error that led to the goal. And I suppose for me, Ollie, the thing to take out of this game is that we did go back to our possession game, and Tony Pulis' Middlesbrough side are probably the least possession-oriented team in the league. So is that too much of a surprise to you to see us with 61% of the ball, ultimately 12 shots to 18 and you know, 2-1? But that tactical setup, I suppose it's not too surprising to see us go back to that.
No, and I think really, you know, with a game that didn't have, you know, anything really riding on it for Reading, you know, it was a chance for, you know, Jose Gomez to really try and implement that system into the team. Obviously, you know, he's had a quick turnaround of games, and perhaps games where he might have felt, you know, that a different system has been needed to try and get the results. But I think a game like this, you know, especially against a side that are willing to let you have the ball, you know, is a perfect opportunity, you know, for that system to try and be implemented. You know, I think especially with the players we have on the pitch, you know, the likes of Baker and Rinomoto, I think that there's a lot of opportunity there, you know, for Gomez to try and implement that system.
Yeah, and there were a few late openings as well. Gareth McCleary and Callum Harriott coming off the bench. He had one. We also had Josh Barrett and Michael Olise also featuring with, of course, you know, Loda and Tom McIntyre was also in amongst the, has continued to be in amongst the squad. Sam Baldock starting up front for the first time under Jose Gomez, I'm pretty sure. That was the first start he had. So, you know, on a different day, maybe we would have snatched something, but ultimately it's not the most important game. And with that in mind, we are going to move on from the recap, leave Jose Gomez with the final word, and then we'll jump straight into pub chat.
I think it's the moment to say how much grateful I'm feeling for the way that everybody in the club, the owner, the chief executive, all the directors, all the employers, everybody in the club, the way that they support me since I arrived. And again, the amazing, incredible, fantastic support from our fans. I said this last week, it's club achievement, that we deserve it. We worked for it. We worked very hard. Under a big pressure, we suffer in some moments, but we kept always our hope and our confidence in our work. So the players deserve it, and everybody deserves it. We really work very, very hard to get to achieve to this moment. We have one more game that cannot change anything, but it's the final game that we will play front of our fans, and everybody wants that to finish well and to give to our fans the 3 points that for a long, long period they waited for.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast, by Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Jose Gomez has just told us what he thought about the Middlesbrough game. A few weeks ago, he talked about the transfer market and exactly what's going to be happening in that. So Pub Chat this week is all about the transfer market. And you know, there's so many questions on it as well that we've had in the mailbag. So it's kind of divided into two. But we're going to talk about the sort of two most important areas that we think Reading need to invest in the summer. And Gomez a couple of weeks back said, we need free and cheap players, young players and loan players, and we need to sell some of the players we have. Part of this money we get from selling players can be used to respect the FA rules, financial fair play is under control. We have been working very well. Everybody knows we have been making a big effort to reduce this. Now, in terms of who is potentially going to be leaving, Ollie, I think we'll put that to one side for the moment, because ultimately there's so many variables, you know, whether a team comes in for someone like Yakimete or Liam Moore again, in terms of us being able to shift some of the older players like David Milo and Gareth McCleary, who are on big contracts. That is all up in the air at the moment. But things we can speculate a bit clearer on are the areas of the pitch that we can sort of invest in. And out of goalkeepers, fullbacks, centre backs, centre mids, wide midfielders and strikers, let's say, yeah, take it in turns and say our two most important areas to improve the team on. Where would you start and say out of those positions needs to be improved?
I'd start from the back, to be honest. I'd prioritise a goalkeeper. I think we've seen in the second half of this season, just how important a good goalkeeper is. And I think, you compare the performances of Martinez to the three keepers that have come before him this season. I think, he's won us so many points. You can pick out, a fantastic save in virtually every game he's played so far. And, I think it really is true that it saves me in points. I think, my mind goes back to the away game at Ipswich, where he made, seven or eight world-class saves, really. And we probably would have lost that game, if he hadn't made them and, lose that game. And you lose a bit of momentum. You lose confidence from losing to the worst side in the league. I mean, you lose the 3 points you got. So you can't underestimate how important he's been for ending the season. Obviously, the ideal scenario is that we're able to get him in on a permanent deal. Obviously, that does look quite unlikely, with the way things are working for him at Arsenal. I mean, but I think for me, that's proven to me just how important a good goalkeeper is. And I think you look at, good Reading sides in the past and how important a goalkeeper has been to those teams. You think of Marcus Hanneman in 05-06, Adam Federici in 11-12, and obviously the playoff season 2 years ago was sort of built on Ali Al-Habsi between the sticks. So I think for me that's the number one priority.
Do you think at this level, I mean, Martinez, beforehand when he came to us, I don't think he was necessarily, you could say, definitely above our level, but I think it's quite clear now that he's good enough for the Premier League, because not only does he make the saves, but he's good with his feet as well and his distribution is very good. Do you think it is realistic that we can bring in a goalkeeper who is, has that dual threat, as it were? Because we've got Yarkola, who's very good at the saving. Sam Walker, probably a bit more of a saving aerial goalkeeper, not so much with his distribution. Being able to team those two aspects together, do you actually, what's your hope on actually being able to bring someone like that in?
I think it's probably a lot easier than you'd think, actually. I think a lot of goalkeepers, nowadays are being trained to play with the ball at their feet, because so many managers want to play that style of play. And I think, especially, I think goalkeepers coming through sort of academies, are taught the importance of playing the ball with your feet. I mean, we have been very, very lucky with the way Martinez has come out, and how he performed for us. But I think, I think someone might have said it on the show last week that, there are plenty more fish in the sea, so to speak. I think, I said that, he's probably out of our price range. I think he himself has spoken about how he doesn't want to be going back out on loan again. So that probably rules that option out. I think he either wants to, be number one at Arsenal, which, despite how good he's been for us, is probably quite unlikely, or go out somewhere on a permanent deal, which I suppose is, a good option for us. But then again, have we got those funds? I think that's probably what a lot of this comes down to, is whether the money is available for us to bring in the players we want to. But I think in terms of a goalkeeper, you can quite easily spend, not too much on a goalkeeper, on a good goalkeeper, if you know what I mean. Obviously, a good striker at this level will cost you probably, upwards of 10, 15 million now, whereas a good goalkeeper will probably cost you a lot less.
Yeah, it's a good point to make. And to be honest, I do agree on the sense that there are a lot of good goalkeepers out there, because like Martinez, like Henderson, who's been at Sheffield United this season, players like Sam Johnstone, who's at West Brom, having been at Man United, there are, there's a stockpile of good goalkeepers at these good clubs at the moment. And
second-choice Premier League goalkeepers, aren't they, really?
Yeah, and they can't all play. And ultimately, as a goalkeeper, you have to make that decision as to whether you do want to play or not. And, if we get one of them on loan, I'm certainly don't think that we have to get a goalkeeper for the next 10 years in the summer. We can get someone for just the season. In terms of my two most important areas, I probably wouldn't have goalkeeper in there. I'd probably have centre back in there, because for me, Matt Miazga leaving is going to leave a massive hole. Yeah, you know, kind of like Martinez, I suppose. But Matt Miazga leaving personally is for me a bigger, more central hole, because we saw how, you know, Liam Moore playing with Thiago Elori, with Paul McShane, and it just didn't quite work out. And I do think that the defensive aspect of this, of Gomez's success so far, has been kind of underrated. And Miazga's role in that, I think he's been, my personal opinion, the best loan signing we've made of the ones in January. And just for, I don't know what you think, for centre-backs, it is, again, it's that very difficult thing, and probably harder than it is for goalkeepers, to bring in someone who can play the style that Jose Gomez wants and can do the dirty work.
Yeah, for sure. No, I would agree that Miazga's been the most important of the loanees, actually. I mean, I only said goalkeepers because I think, you know, it's probably, you know, maybe easier to replace Martinez. But no, I think he's been fantastic, Matt Miazga. I think the relationship that he struck up with Liam Moore can't be underrated as well. You know, I think he's an excellent defender. You know, he can play with the ball at his feet. He's got very good aerial ability, you know, and really everything you want, you know, in a centre back. And I think it's the same with, you know, with Martinez, that he was a very, very clear upgrade on, you know, Yacola, Manone and Walker, you know, in the same sense that Miazga's been a huge upgrade on Thiago Elori. And I think, you know, when Elori was here, you probably thought he was a decent enough defender, you know, came from Liverpool, you know, wasn't too bad. But it's not until you, you know, see someone like Matt Miazga play that you realise that Thiago Elori wasn't very good at all, and that you know, there are a lot better options out there.
Yeah, that realisation that Thiago Elori isn't good is probably one that we should have had a long time ago, and maybe a lot of Reading fans did have a long time ago. But
he's played 4 games for Sporting Lisbon since signing, so that should tell you all you need to know.
I know, and I'm still not entirely sure why they signed him, to be honest. It was a very odd one, but nonetheless, I suppose as Reading fans, we've benefited from it. So good luck to him. In your second area, then, if you've gone for goalkeepers for your first, would you go centre backs or somewhere else for your second area to invest in?
I'd go for at the other end of the team. I'd go for strikers, which is probably one of the harder positions to buy in, especially if you want a very good striker. Because as I said, they cost a lot of money. Even at this level, you know, you've seen teams like, you know, Middlesbrough and Aston Villa, you know, 15 odd million on strikers. You know, over the last few years, and we certainly can't afford that at the moment. But again, you know, I'll say it again, it's about this upgrade. You know, it's not until we saw Nelson Oliveira play that, you know, how much better he was than Ring's other strikers. Obviously, you know, Iñaki Mateo is coming to some good form, but I think for me, he's a very streaky player, Iñaki Mateo. You know, I think obviously he's our top goal scorer this season, but, you know, the majority of his goals have come in that one run he had sort of, you know, October, November time, and then the rest of them have come in, you know, the run he's had lately. So whether he's a player you can sort of rely upon to, you know, score goals consistently throughout the season, that's a bit up in the air for me. And I think someone like Nelson Oliveira, you know, obviously he's done well since coming in. Perhaps I think looking back, it was maybe a mistake to bring him back as early as they did from that hamstring injury, because obviously his performance has dipped and he ended up, you know, coming off very early against West Brom. But if you can get that right striker in, you know, you look at the teams that are up there this season. You know, Norwich, arguably with the signing of the season in Timu Pukki, he's the top scorer this season. It's obviously done very well for them. And Leeds have had Patrick Bamford, Sheffield United have had, you know, Billy Sharp and David McGoldrick. And, you know, so it's clear, you know, the importance of a striker. Obviously, you know, they're the players that score goals. You know, it sounds very simple and very cliche, but, you know, you need a good player up there to put chances away. And I think that's perhaps been Reading's problem over the last couple of years, that they haven't had those players to convert them. You know, we missed the influence of Jan Kernighan, obviously, 2 years ago, you know, when he got 18, 20-odd goals. And I think that just shows the importance of a good striker up there.
For me, the impact of Oliveira, and as you mentioned, McGoldrick and Billy Sharp, and players sort of like Lukas Jukovic, who's done a kind of unsung hero role at Birmingham this season, it shows the importance of experience in your Championship strikers, and that is attainable for a reasonable fee, because you know there's a lot of players out there who perhaps aren't very, you know, attractive in terms of their names or their history, but can, you know, they have got 150 goals in Football League and they are out there and they do a very good job. And that's probably where we'd have to go, I think, for strikers. Gomez has said that we can't afford the fee that we've agreed with Norwich for Oliveira. The idea of, you know, some sort of plan B coming off is certainly not something that I'd rule out, because I really don't think Norwich want Oliveira. But, yeah, for me, strikers, it comes down to quantity over quality, because we have got a lot of strikers. And I suppose it's the question.
They're not very good. That's the problem.
That's the thing. And they are contracted to the club. And the idea that, you know, we can probably sell Mark McNulty for £100,000 if we wanted to, but we paid £1 million for him last summer. And, you know, the same sort of goes for Bodvarsson and Baldock. At what point do you say, you know, we'll go with four and, you know, play one each time? And maybe, you know, to be honest, we've got about six. So we'll go with six and play one or two. And maybe that each of them will score 8 goals. Or do you prefer to go down the route of we'll have 2 or 3, but you know we'll really back them. We'll play them every week, no matter what. They'll obviously be a bit more invested in because we'll have the space and a bit more money for them. Which can you realistically expect for next season?
I think obviously you know the more players you have that aren't playing, then the more you know of an unhappy squad you have. And I think that was one of the main reasons why Mark McNulty went out on loan in January, because he wasn't getting games, you know, and, you know, players like him and David Myler, you know, weren't playing, you know, so that isn't good for squad morale. So I think obviously with, you know, the system that Gomez plays, you know, he prefers to play that one striker up there. I think you can't really afford to have, you know, six, you know, in the squad. I think, you know, so that means you'll probably have two, you know, at a very maximum of 3 on the bench, you know, so that means, you know, 2 or 3 strikers missing out on the squad each week. So I think it depends, because I think if you do get that 20 goal a season striker that you can rely on for the campaign, then it is fine to just to have 2 or 3, you know. But if you are sort of basing it more on a rotation policy, you know, or if you are, you know, running the risk of obviously that main goal scorer getting an injury, then obviously it is good to have backup. But I think, you know, you can't afford to have, you know, an overcrowded squad. I think that was, as I say, the issue that Reading had earlier in the season, and one that they, you know, rectified quite well in January, I think.
Yeah, well, if you talk about having a couple strikers that are good, tell me Norwich's third choice striker, because quite frankly, I don't think anyone in the league knows it, because they've got Pukki and then they've got Jordan Rhodes off the bench, and quite frankly, after that, who gives a damn? So it's a fair enough point to make. And I think for my second area, the strikers question, for me, it depends so much on selling players. And I know what you mean. Players like Mark McNulty, especially if they're not playing, do simply not want to be at the club, and they're not very good to have around the club in such a circumstance. But it's all up in the air at the moment. For me, I think we need to invest in a centre mid. Lewis Baker going, Ajaria going. It would not surprise me if Rinomota becomes subject of some good bids in the summer. If any decent scouts are out there, then they should know about him, quite frankly. And that's going to present a very difficult challenge, because that leaves us with John Swift, another player who, let's face it, if anyone offers us £7 million for John Swift, like it's been reported, then I think we should snap the hand off. And Liam Kelly and David Myler, who's, you know, coming back from a loan at Coventry. And if you start to cash in, or if you need to cash in and you send players back from loan, you really find yourself quite thin there. So, I mean, yeah, for me, I think centre midfielders, it depends what sort of, you know, what's from you, Ollie, what sort of centre midfielders do you think we need to bring in? Do we need to bring in sort of all round centre midfielders or playmakers? Where do you think Gomez will go?
I think he'll try and get good passes of the ball. I mean, I know it sounds obvious that you want a midfielder who can pass the ball, but I think we've seen with especially with this type of football, with this possession style of football, that you need players that fit the system. You know, you can't just have any old midfielder and chuck them in there. And I think that's perhaps why, you know, he didn't fancy David Myler, and he's not really fancied Liam Kelly. Obviously, you know, Kelly was called Iniesta by Yapstam, but obviously not quite work for him here. But I think you have to pick players that fit the system. I think obviously, you know, you've got Rinomota, who's probably more of that defensive player, but John Swift is more of the forward thinking player. So I think if you can get a backup for both of those, and then, you know, perhaps play, you know, one in the three with those. And I think, again, you know, it comes down to whether we can get these loanees on permanent deals, you know, because I'd be pretty happy with bringing Baker or Ajayi back in.
Yeah.
On a permanent deal. So I think a lot of this discussion, you know, bases, you know, we're talking about positions, really. You know, I spoke about goalkeepers and strikers, and you've spoken about centre backs and centre midfield. You know, they're the five positions where we brought these loan players in January. You know, so it depends whether we can get, you know, those players on permanent deals, I suppose.
Yes, and that is certainly what Jose Gomez will be thinking about at this very moment, I should imagine. And let's tie up pub chat then, move into the mailbag, and don't for a minute think that that's the end of the transfer talk.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
Kicking us off in the mailbag, there's a lot of it, by the way, this week, which adds to the old testament that when we lose, we get a bigger mailbag, but certainly not much of it is about the game, to be fair. Connor Lewis Lee Mays asks, what did you think of the new Avengers film? To be honest, I think the person hosting this podcast is one of the seven people on this planet who's not really got any interesting comic book films.
And the co-host is also one of those seven people, so you've probably put the worst people to ask. I mean.
Yeah, or is that that's one with Batman in, isn't it?
I honestly could not tell you.
I know that if Wim, the former host of the show, is listening, he'd be furious at that sort of suggestion. So we'll move on. Connor also asked, do you think we'll be given sufficient funds to bolster the squad? I mean, the answer to that, if judging by all of the noise coming out of the club, is simply no at the moment. It's simply that FFP is demanding, I think it's £39 million over three seasons. I think last season we lost about £23 million. My numbers aren't perfect. If they're wrong, I apologise. And that means that you can't keep having the owners write a cheque and handing you over the cash, because that effectively counts as a loss. And I think the funds that we'll have this summer are going to be out of player sales. I think in terms of raising funds from player sales, I think generally, Ollie, I think we're going to be pretty reluctant to sell anyone, because the only ones that are going to be worth anything are going to be the ones that are, you know, the sort of players like Rinomoto and Liam Moore that make the difference between, you know, staying in the division and falling down to League One.
Yeah, and that's the dilemma. I think, you know, we're certainly paying the price, you know, for the erratic spending of the last sort of 2 years. I mean, especially the summer 2 years ago. You know, I think it's coming back to bite us again. You know, just what the hell was Ron Gourlay doing as CEO? You know, spending these crazy transfer fees on players that didn't really deserve, you know, the money that he valued them at. So we're in a very, very difficult situation, I agree. I think, you know, the fact that, you know, Nelson Oliveira is rumoured to be, you know, around £3 million, and that Gomez doesn't think we can probably afford that, you know, is fairly worrying. I think to rely on the loan market again, I'd be very surprised if we didn't sign, you know, at least sort of five, you know, loan players, which is the quota to get in the squad. And other than that, yeah, I think, you know, there are players of some value in the side. I think, obviously, you know, the likes of Liam Kelly, who you'll probably look to get rid of this summer, you know, is still, I think he's 22 or 23 still, you know, so there is still value in him, you know, and there are players, as I say, who could raise money, but you're sort of weighing up whether, you know, selling players like Liam Moore and Andy Rinomoto, you know, whilst they'll get big funds, you know, are you going to be able to, because you have to replace them, you know, and sort of look to get players in other positions. You know, you're sort of selling one player and sort of buying three to replace them in a sense. I think, you know, it's the same with John Swift. I think I'd agree with what you said earlier about if we got offered $7 million for him, then you would definitely take it. But then it's a case of, you know, who do you buy with that $7 million? Because first of all, you've got to replace John Swift, and that might cost, you know, say $4 or $5 million in itself. You know, so then you're perhaps only left with $2 odd million to try and improve the squad in other areas. So it's going to be a very, very difficult challenge for Gomez and for Nigel Howe this summer. I think that, you know, it is a good thing, really, you know, they are sticking to the FFP restrictions. You know, you saw what happened with Birmingham earlier this season, and you know, we certainly don't want to be in a situation like that. You know, so I think ultimately it is a good thing that, you know, they are being, you know, quite restrained with the finances. But in terms of players coming in, I think it's going to be quite a difficult summer on that front.
Yeah, to be honest, I think it'll be quite fascinating to watch as a Reading fan, because it's not, you know, I'm not a massive fan of the gossip circle and everything like that and thinking, oh my God, we're going to go and sign X, Y, and Z. It's not, I don't think it helps fan expectations when you go into a summer thinking, here is the summer that we build a squad to go into the Premier League. And therefore, it means what you do sign, perhaps you hold a little bit dearer and makes a bit more of an impact. So SJ Watson 19, sort of on that note, says, with our next transfer window possibly causing us to be restricted to signings, should we fail to sign Oliveira permanently, do you think McNulty and Andrija Novakovic have done enough on loan to prove themselves a use to the first team as a leading striker? I mean, for me, when it comes to those loan players who are coming back, it's not what they've done on loan that's going to make a difference. I think, you know, maybe it'll make a difference in terms of play other clubs trying to sign them. But I think those first 3-4 weeks on the training ground are going to be much more important to Jose Gomez, because, you know, it's all well and good going to Hibernian and scoring some penalties, or going to Holland and Novakovic's goals have generally, from what I've seen, been poachers' efforts. And those are good, they count. But is it what Jose Gomez wants? And that is the question that I think is going to be the most important thing with determining their future.
Yeah, I'd agree. And also, you know, the leagues that they're playing in, you know, aren't quite as high a standard as the Championship is. You know, you only need to look at Mark Menalti to see that. You know, he couldn't really hit a barn door in a Championship earlier this season, but obviously gone up to Scotland and done very well. You know, whether that's a case of, you know, being in better surroundings or whatever, you know, I don't think he would have scored those goals for Reading. And I think it's obviously worth having a look at them. I think Novakovic especially, you know, especially with what he's done over the last couple of years, you know, it would be silly for Gomez not to take a look at him. And I think ultimately, you know, the experience comes in playing those games. I think, you know, we saw with McNulty in the season that, you know, when he played, he didn't play that well. But I think he obviously deserves a second chance. You know, he's deserved his opportunity having scored those goals in Scotland. But it is then down to him to prove, you know, to Gomez that he's worthy of staying. And I think ultimately that comes with scoring goals, and strikers are, you know, ranked and graded on scoring goals. So it comes down to that. Yeah, look, we talked about the host of strikers that the Reading have got earlier in the show. So he's definitely going to look to sell, you know, two or three. You know, whether McNulty, you know, wants to go. Obviously, he will have enjoyed his loan spell away and perhaps doesn't feel that the Reading's the best fit for him. But there'll certainly be a lot of options for Gomez to look at, and so that's for sure.
Yeah, and one option again on the Oliveira front, Dean Bennett asks, do you think Reading could possibly get a better striker than Nelson Oliveira over the summer if the funds are available? Now, we're going to have to go on the assumption that the funds aren't really available to go and splash the cash. So for me, the way that we can get a striker as good as or better than Oliveira, barring some kind of, you know, Kevin Doyle-esque fluke, which is, you know, once in a generation you get that sort of signing, and I'm afraid that was still the generation we're in now in terms of the way that we're watching football. But the only avenue I can see that might potentially work is going into Eastern Europe or Southern Europe and picking up someone. And they can work, they can be cheap, but you take a player like Adey Popper, who came from has played in the Champions League and has come from a very good team in a not-so-great league, and I think that's when you sort of hit the roadblock in terms of those players are the best players from that part of the world, but ultimately, when you bring them to the Championship, it is very, very seldom that they're the ones who can do it. And in terms of where Reading are at with our funds and with the scouting and everything that we have at our disposal, signing someone who scored 25 goals a year in Bulgaria might be our best hope. But in terms of being better than Oliveira, I can't quite see it at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, Dennis Rackholz is another one that obviously was a cheaper option. I think, you know, he came in as opposed to Connor Washington three or four years ago, and obviously didn't do that well. But you know, I mentioned Timu Pukki earlier, and obviously he was a free signing for Norwich, you know, so they can come off. As you know, Pukki was linked to Reading last time as well, so, you know, so who knows where we might be now if that want to come off. But I think you have to try and base it on the scouts. I think obviously, you know, there's been reports that you know, we've had scouts in a couple of games in Portugal over the last couple of weeks, which, you know, which isn't surprising considering the Gomez link. And I think, you perhaps have to hope that Gomez sort of knows that league. Obviously, you know, he's not managed there a lot, despite being Portuguese, but you know, he will have you know, watched that league quite a lot. So I think you have to hope that he can find sort of, some sort of hidden gem in that league. Obviously, you know, he's managed in Hungary as well. I mean, I don't know if that's an avenue that we'll be looking at, but yeah, I think, you know, if you're going to get a striker from the Championship, it's going to be very, very difficult. You know, I think because naturally, you know, teams won't want to sell to other teams in the Championship quite as easily or for as much money. So you are going to have to try and find value elsewhere. You know, and again, that can work. You know, we've seen Norwich this season over the last few years under Daniel Farke. You know, the majority of their signings have come from, you know, Germany and around Europe for cut price fees. You know, so it can work. And I think you just sort of have to hope that Reading can try and get something similar.
Yes, that the idea of Portugal is, you know, I think that is going to be a bit of a theme for the summer, in the same way that Jaap Stam and Holland was the theme, and Reading were reportedly as one of 30 teams represented by scouts at a recent Rio Ave game. So, you know, that being Jose Gomez's old team, it would not surprise me if we go down that route. Tommy asks what players are on the transfer list, providing that we can't bring in a replacement for them without them going first with their funds, or a youth team player stepping up. In terms of the transfer list, Ollie, I think we've kind of mentioned the names so far. You're looking at, I think, Liam Kelly. I think he's probably going to be on it. Someone like David Myler. Any names that immediately jump out at you, do you think will be maybe someone like Sam Walker or even Sam Baldock are going to be on it?
Well, in terms of what I'd go for, I'd try and get rid of some of the, you know, the likes of Sam Baldock. I think potentially, you know, that there's a few players who are sort of out of contract in a year's time, you know, who you might want to look to get rid of, you know, to try and get some money out of them before their contract runs up. I think Gareth McCleary is amongst that group, and Chris Gunter as well. I think obviously they're two players that sort of quite split opinion, obviously being here for a long, long time and, you know, not getting any younger. I think McCleary's into his 30s now and hasn't scored for over 2 years. So, you know, there's questions to be asked over both of them. You know, obviously they do add that valuable experience, and I think, you know, certainly if you remove those two players from the squad, you know, then you are sort of looking around to where the experience is going to come from. But, you know, they are players who, you know, that might well get let go for a free in a year's time. You know, so there are questions to be asked. You know, do you try and get some money out of them this summer?
And finally, on the transfer front, before we move into the second half of the mailbag, is Badginess asking, considering the performance of our academy players against Boa, do you think it's time to rely on this crop of under-23s to fill the first team squad next season? And do you think Gomez is already thinking this way due to the FFP restrictions? Now, we've seen it a lot of times, haven't we, where managers getting towards the end of the season, especially when they're safe, bring in the youth players. So I wouldn't say that's particularly FFP related. I think that's, you know, sensible management to have a look at what sort of players you got around. But, you know, ultimately, I think good teams in every division are, you know, bulked out by the academy players. You think of someone like Harry Winks at Spurs, came into the Spurs team and was on their bench and was their sort of fourth or fifth choice centre mid for a good couple of years before you could say he was really a player that's of Champions League quality. And the same thing goes for Reading. You've got players like Omar Richards, who can be a perfectly good backup left back, you know, Josh Barrett, who, you know, had been tested by Brian McDermott years ago when he was first coming through and is now back in the mix. These sort of players, time and time again, don't, you know, they always come up, but they don't always make it. And Jake Taylor is another one who's the perfect example of a squad player who you can drop in and out, plays a couple positions and does a decent job. And I think next season that is exactly the sort of thing we're going to be seeing, Ollie, because ultimately not only do we have an FFP issue in terms of our general finances, the academy has probably been our single highest area of investment as a football club for the past decade, or certainly for the past 5 years, and therefore, you know, you've got to use it.
I'll bring up the Norwich example again. I mean, I'm singing their praise on today's show, obviously, and they won promotion at the weekend.
The example to follow.
Well, I think it's just been superb to watch them this season, and the way they've gone about it, it's just been excellent. I mean, as I say, you know, it's a model that I hope that we can follow, you know, bringing in a foreign manager who doesn't know the league, you know, bringing in players for cut price fees elsewhere. And on this point, you know, they've used their academy, you know, massively. You know, you look at the, you know, their fullbacks, Max Aarons and Jamal Lewis have played a key part in their success this season. You know, so there's a model for it there to work. I think, you know, it's good that Gomez is someone, you know, who is willing to play as academy players, you know, giving debuts to East and to Elise this season. And he's clearly not afraid to play those youngsters. And I think it does depend whether they're ready or not. I think, you know, we've seen it with Annie Rinomoto this season. He deserved his chance and that he's obviously coped very well, you know, with coming in. But then you look at someone like Daniel Oda, who we discussed earlier, you know, who did struggle for a bit when coming in. So I don't think you can rely on those players. I think, you know, certainly in Norwich's case, you know, that Max Aarons and Jamal Lewis have been, you know, sort of helped by the experienced defenders alongside them. But there's no reason to say why Reading can't get those, you know, those sorts of players in. And especially, you know, if there is a lack of funds, you know, then they've got every opportunity.
Yeah, and on that note, Christopher Cordery says, would you like to see McIntyre, Elise and Barrett all given starts along with Loda and Rinomoto against Birmingham? It would be good to see five academy players start in a game. And yes, it would be, but ultimately I think that's probably a couple too many in my opinion. With
you've also got the Bucks and Bucks Cup final, haven't you, on the Monday, so I'm not too sure how many academy players might be given a chance if they're being rested for that one. But
yeah, but if the club is taking that one as seriously as they probably will, to be fair, and I wouldn't blame them. So yeah, I mean, Loda and Rinomoto, I think, are going to start ultimately if they were given that Loda scored against Borough and Rinomoto's obviously continued his form. Elise, Barrett and McIntyre, I'm happy to keep them on the bench, because if you overload it and things go badly wrong, then the momentum and the feel-good feeling of the final game of the season, it can have a knock-on effect for next season. So I probably would avoid that going too overboard, but it certainly is a good sentiment, and the option of it being there is a nice one to have. On moving on then, Elm Park Royals simply ask, are we staying up? Yes, we are. That is officially confirmed now. And Ray on the similar note saying, Norwich, a team that have popped up almost as much as Reading in this week's podcast, saying Norwich celebrating the promotion to the Premiership is expected. Should we really be celebrating avoiding relegation? It's a question that kind of popped up last week as myself and Simeon admitted that we couldn't really go wild with celebration after the West Brom game. And the thing is, for me, Ollie, is that celebrating avoiding relegation is kind of, it is a bit of an oxymoron for a team like Reading who shouldn't be in the trouble that they're in already, certainly with the money we've lost over the past few years. But it's relief, isn't it?
It's all about context, isn't it? I think, you know, you look at how far behind Reading were at Christmas, you know, what a predicament they were in. I think I certainly wasn't very hopeful, and I don't think many fans were very hopeful of survival 6 months ago, you know. So I think whilst this obviously isn't the ideal position to be in, you know, it's certainly worth celebrating the transformation that's occurred over the last 6 months. You know, as I say, I had, you know, very, very little hope 6 months ago, you know, and the turnaround that has commenced under Jose Gomez, you know, the performances that we've been putting in, you know, the connection between the club and the fans seems to have returned. And these are all things that are definitely worth celebrating. You know, obviously you don't want to celebrate, you know, surviving relegation by the skin of your teeth, but it's all about context. You know, you look at the position we were in to where we are now, you know, it's been fantastic, and that in itself is worth celebrating, I think.
Yeah, and for me, the reason why when we were in the relegation zone, there were fans saying, oh, you know, a season in League One wouldn't do us any harm, and that might be true, but football doesn't work that way. There is no sort of bottoming out for a team like Reading. Look at Coventry, look at Portsmouth, etc., etc. We can't, you know, we couldn't at the time, and we certainly still can't just say, oh, well, it's only a season, we'll have a good time, visit some new grounds and come back up, because that, as I say, simply isn't how it works. So the avoiding of relegation in and of itself for a team like us is, you know, ultimately a good thing, because we can't, you know, rely on just coming straight back up, and who knows what would have happened to the club had we gone down this season. Moving on, and Sean Hearn sent in a random light-hearted question. With the local elections coming up, which Reading players would you vote for as PM and why? Now, Ollie, I'm going to say the one person who I've picked up on this is Paul McShane, because as someone who has that kind of, you know, relatively light-hearted but also has a serious tone, obviously has, like, I would say he comes across as a reasonably intelligent bloke, certainly in terms of his, you know, sort of understands what's going on around him and that sort of stuff. And generally speaking, you know, he's not club captain for, and you remember the fact that he is club captain, he's not that for no reason. So I'm going to go for Paul McShane as my politician Reading player. I have no idea on his policy on anything. So if it turns out he's going to milkshake duck me, then, you know, I'll withdraw my comments. But where would you go on this, Ollie?
Yeah, but it'd be interesting to see his policies on Ireland and whatnot. But we'll stay away from that. But I'd go for Liam Moore. I think obviously, you know, that might be a bit of an obvious one, but you know, he's shown a standing captain this season. I think he's got that connection between you know, the fans and the players, and I think that's ultimately what you need. You know, you want connection between, you know, the people and those at the top, and I think Liam Moore has shown that, you know, with his, you know, multiple gestures to fans that you need and whatnot, and comes across very well in interviews. So yeah, I think Liam Moore would get my vote if I was picking a prime minister from the Reading players. I mean, I might throw John O'Shea in there as a bit of a elder statesman as well, but so yeah, a trio of centre backs perhaps.
Very strange, or not very strangely at all, completely forgot that John O'Shea played for this football team. I suppose,
I know, yeah.
I mean, he's retiring, strictly speaking, next
week.
Is he going to get send-off or what?
I think the plan under Clement was for him to become part of the coaching team.
When I said that to Jose Gomez in the Tarleston interview with him, it was almost like it was the first he'd heard of that plan. So yeah. I really don't think that's going to happen.
Well, I mean, I think he got sort of a standing. He was sort of clapped every time he got the ball on his debut back in August. So I think that was a bit of a mickey taking. But, you know, look, whenever he's come in this season, he's done an all right job. You know, he obviously lacks the pace that he might have once had, you know, but he's been all right, actually. I think, you know, when he first came in, I think a lot of fans were sort of saying, you know, why are we signing this player who was, you know, went down once under them last season and clearly hasn't got age on his side, you know. But for me, you know, especially in the air, he's been dominant. You know, he's proved a reliable understudy, but yeah, it'll be interesting, I think, actually. I think he obviously wants to go into coaching in somewhere. I think he has been doing his badges, so whether that's with us, I'm not sure. That's probably as secure as it was 12 months ago.
Yeah, well, I suppose in a way, don't rule out him coming off the bench in the last minute if we win a penalty, is all I'm going to say on next week, because it's as far as I'm aware, it's still a thing. That he's retiring, and I think as you know, the player that he is, probably deserves some sort of a nice little gesture, and we'll see what state the game is in to allow that, whether he's in the squad at all. Rob asks, will Yaku Mate marry him? I think he's got an Instagram that he Yaku Mate quite often hosts question and answer sessions on Instagram, so I think that's your best chance to ask that, to be honest, Rob. Sadly,
and there's probably quite a lot of people queuing up for that as well, I'd imagine. So.
Yeah, sadly, our communication channels with the club are not as rich as that would demand. And finally, Jack Killick has emailed us. Any emails, of course, thetarlestend@gmail.com. And of course, next week being our season review, please send us in those questions and thoughts and opinions. Jack Killick asks, regardless of whether we sign all the loan signings, I feel so positive about next season. Haven't felt this optimistic in a long time. Even under Stam, I never truly bought into what he was doing, even though we finished third. With Jose, I've been so impressed. He's got his style of play, but also the ability to adapt to the opposition, which Stam was too stubborn to do, along with a passion for the club, which is great to see. Huge credit has to go to the owners. They're new to English football and realised they made a mistake with Von Gourlay, and rather than just letting things get worse, they stepped in. Bringing back Nigel Howe, then really backing Jose Gomez in the transfer window, has been pivotal to our survival. Along with funding Bearwood and seemingly wanting to further back the team in the transfer window, even if FFP doesn't allow it. Then finally, I think the rise of Club 1871 has been fantastic. Really enjoyed sitting in there and will be getting a season ticket for the South Stand next season. It seems like now everyone at the club is working in the same direction, and that can only be a positive thing. In December, I was dreading games, and now I can't wait for the next match. Long may it continue. Thank you very much for that, Jack. And with that sense of looking forward, let's jump in now to any other business and the preview of the Birmingham game.
The Tarlehurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlehurstend.com.
Right, Ollie, I presume there's going to be a weekend preview for the Birmingham game in a few days' time.
Yes, the final one of the season for Sunday. Yeah.
So, in that sense, we'll keep it relatively brief on what is the Sunday lunchtime kickoff at the Mad Stab between Birmingham and Reading, the final game of the 2018-19 season. It's come around. I wouldn't say quick. I would not describe this as a season that has flown by. Maybe it's...
I would, in fairness, actually.
Maybe it's me.
It feels like yesterday that we were playing Derby away. Derby at home on the first game of the season. It's gone incredibly quickly for me, considering you know how bad we've been. But yeah.
Yeah, I think maybe in that sense it's because it's been... It's not been a case of, oh, I can't wait for the weekend, I can't wait for the game, or, you know, I've got so many sort of things that I hope are going to happen. Because the season has largely been a case of, you know, if we're away at somewhere and you know, you follow it for the first 15 minutes and we go a goal down, or, you know, something terrible happens straight after half time at home, or, you know, what have you, the sort of themes that have been happening. It has been a case of, oh, God, here we go again, or, like... And yeah, it just feels like it's been a bit of a slow drag for me this season. And I get your thoughts in, like on the Gmail and Twitter and everything, to say how you guys, the listeners, have found it. But ultimately, this Birmingham game is going to be a bit of a celebration. Portugal Day is the official sort of theme for the day, and you know, remember Ginger Day we've had before, and an Orange Day for Japstam. And
my mind does go back to that Orange Day we had for Japstam, and obviously, you know, less than 10 months later, you know, he was hated by the fan base and was sacked. So
yeah,
hopefully it doesn't go the same way for Gomez. You know, hopefully not in 10 months' time we'll be calling for Gomez's head. You know, hopefully it goes the other way for him.
Yeah, and I think he's probably just about accrued enough good faith for the moment to next season be, you know, even if it is a bit of a difficulty, to be sort of currying good favour with the fans. It depends what sort of decisions he makes. If he brings in a few Portuguese players that he sticks with and they're awful, and he sticks with them regardless, or his tactics, then yeah, I can see it changing. But, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. As for now, Birmingham, they're the eighth best team away from home. They've had a lot of draws recently. So not a team that we can turn up and expect to just roll over. Obviously, their 9-point deduction has comfortably kept them in the league regardless. If we had a 9-point deduction, we'd currently be needing to win, basically, and hope Rotherham lose their final game. So that's exactly what it would do to us. So they've survived that. The question is, do you rotate much, really, Ollie? Do you think that you want to bring in a lot of new players, a lot of the academy players, or do you effectively just want to see out the season with, you know, give everyone who's played relatively well in the last few weeks their run out and let that be that?
I think it's always nice to finish on a win. I think, you know, carry some sort of good feeling and some momentum into the summer, especially, you know, being at home in front of your own fans for the final time for a couple of months. It's always nice to get a win. I think for that to happen, you know, you need to play a fairly strong side. I think, you know, we saw Liam Kelly and Saeed Hezatalahi back on the bench last week. I think it wouldn't be a bad idea to play either of those. I think obviously just so Gomez can get a bit of a look at them. Obviously, you know, Hezatalahi will go back to Rostov in the summer. You know, I think he might be an okay option if we want to sign him in the summer. So, you know, an opportunity for Gomez to look at him in a championship there. And again, for Liam Kelly, you know, who's obviously not played, I don't think, since that Sheffield United game away sort of 2 months ago now. So it could be an opportunity, you know, for those two to sort of, you know, show Gomez, you know, what they can do. Other than that, you know, we talked about academy players earlier. Again, I think that Bucks and Bucks Cup final might take precedence for that. But I wouldn't be surprised, as you say, to see Rina Motu and to see Loda as well. But, you know, I wouldn't make too many changes. I think Mo Barry was, we didn't play last week, did he, against Middlesbrough. So might throw him back in. But other than that, yeah, not too many changes.
Yeah, ultimately, I think you just want to give your first team its final run out, and yes, and ending on a win is important. Speaking of which, the only change in the table that can happen at the moment is Reading can finish anywhere between 19th and 21st. Millwall behind us have a game in hand. They're 2 points behind us. QPR 2 points ahead of us. QPR go to Sheffield Wednesday. Millwall host Bristol City and then go to Wigan. Is it just slightly nicer to finish 19th than 21st? It's the final spot above the relegation zone, so looking back in the history books, it won't look particularly good. Whether we deserve it to look good or not is another matter, but do you think there is any importance in not finishing 21st?
Not an awful lot, I don't think. I mean, obviously, you know, survival's the main thing. you know, obviously, I think if we were to finish 21st, then we would have probably lost our last game, which obviously wouldn't be a good thing. You know, I think obviously whatever happens, we'll have finished with more points than we did last season. I think we're already 2 points better off than we were at the end of the last campaign. You know, so it doesn't matter an awful lot. I think obviously, you know, last year we finished 20th, so obviously it'd perhaps be nice to at least equal or better that. You know, I don't think we've gone above 19th in the table all season. You know, sort of barring those 15 minutes or so that we did against Derby right at the beginning, you know, so perhaps, you know, obviously it'd be nice to try and finish a bit higher. But I think it doesn't matter an awful lot to me personally, no.
No, I think it is just one of those cases of, you know, if we get promoted next season, maybe we'll say, oh, they came all the way from 21st last season, all the way from 19th. But other than that,
one team that sort of finished quite down there and then go up to have a very good season the next year, so hopefully that is us.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe there is a statistic that the team who finishes 19th is 35% more likely to get promoted the next season than the team who finishes 21st, but quite frankly, I don't know it and I'm not going to find it out. So hopefully it's nothing we need to worry about. Let's finish the show then with a table that we do need to worry about, and that is the Prediction League, because Alan Westy's reign as the champion of the Tireless Den Prediction League is over. Westy can't win it, I can't win it, Tom can't win it, and Simeon can't win it. But four players are still right up there in with a chance of winning it. Dan Wimbush on 32 points, Johnny Williams on 33, as is Dave Handbags Harris, and then yourself, Ollie, on 35 points. Now, you've got a 3-point lead. I will just again mention, like I said last week, if it's a tie break, it comes down to the total points that you predicted that Reading would accrue over the season. So at the moment, you, in all your predictions, reckoned Reading would get 60 points. They're on at the moment, I believe it's 46.
46, yeah.
So, you know, in terms of tiebreakers, you're obviously in the lead at the moment, but ultimately it does mean that it's all to play for, and I will give you, as the leader, the first crack at predicting what's going to happen in the Birmingham game.
I need a point, do I, to win it? Is that right?
More or less. Handbags is, strictly speaking, in tiebreaker sense, Handbags is the best place. He's 2 points behind you. If you finish level with Handbags, I think he'll nick it off you. Depending, you know, obviously, how that go on what everyone picks.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to back right in to get the win. I think hopefully we can finish on a high. Obviously, our home record has been very good under Gomez, so I'm going to go for a 2-1 win to Reading.
2-1 win for Reading in the bag. I, as someone who is avoiding the wooden spoon that currently Westy and Tom Crocker are sharing, I'm going to go 1-1 draw. I think the fact that Birmingham have drawn a lot of their games of late will show them to be a relatively decent side and will make us work a little bit as well. So 1-1 I think it will be, and that draws to a close the penultimate show of the Tireless Den podcast this season. It's, as I say, it's a season that maybe it's slow burn for you, maybe it's pushed ahead really quickly, but, you know, next season with the season review, we are really keen to get any thoughts and in any emails in, any tweets and everything, we'll make sure to include. In terms of the show itself, it's most likely to be next Monday night. I'm afraid the fact that I go on holiday very soon after the final game of the season means there's probably going to be very few bells and whistles. It'll be the classic sort of Skype chat that we've had this season. But again, thank you for everyone who's listened, and I'll give us a proper send-off hopefully next week. And Ollie, thank you, of course, for turning up this week, and we look forward to hearing from you in the weekend preview.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the final show on Thursday. As I say, it's gone very, very quickly. Yeah, we'll have all the team news, all the pre-match chat, and of course, a chat with the Birmingham fan as well, to look ahead to that final game.
And the joy of the dead rubber is certainly something that Reading fans really have to relish, because we haven't had a good dead rubber, you know, apart from obviously last week when Middlesbrough had something to play for. This is the proper old-fashioned dead rubber. Nothing truly matters anymore. It's just a game of football we can go out and enjoy. Sunday lunchtime at the Mad Stad, Portugal Day. Be loud and be proud. Jose Gomez certainly deserves that from us. And we will see you on the other side for the season review of the 2018-19 season. This has been the Tireless Den Podcast. And once again, we say, come on, you Arse.
smile. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail, even when it seems on your tail. Funny how I always leave a trail. You smile, wow. Just starting.